So we are beginning Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. And this is chapter one called Dudley Demented. You ready? Are you excited?
Very excited.
Okay. The hottest day of the summer so far was drawing to a close, and a drowsy silence lay over the large square houses of Privet Drive. Cars that were usually gleaming stood dusty in their drives, and lawns that were once emerald green lay parched and yellowing. The use of hosepipes had been banned due to drought. Deprived of their usual car washing and lawn mowing pursuits, the inhabitants of Privet Drive had retreated into the shade of their cool houses, windows thrown wide open in the hopes of tempting in a non-existent breeze. The only person left outdoors was a teenage boy who was lying flat on his back in a flower bed outside number 4. He was a skinny, black-haired, bespectacled boy who had the pinched, slightly...
Bespectacled?
He had specks all over him.
You could if he was freckly, but he's not freckly.
He's not freckly. He should be freckly. He should be Irish.
He's not Irish.
Irish. Who had the pinched, slightly unhealthy look of someone who had grown a lot in a short space of time. His jeans were torn and dirty. His t-shirt baggy and faded. And the soles of his trainers were peeling away from their uppers. Is it, I don't know, the upper part of the shoe? Yeah. Harry Potter's appearance did not endear him to the neighbors, who were the sort of people who thought scruffiness ought to be punishable by law. But as he had hidden himself behind a large hydrangea bush, this evening, he was quite invisible to passers-by. In fact, the only way he would be spotted was if his Uncle Vernon or Aunt Petunia stuck their heads out the living room window and looked straight down into the flower bed below. On the whole, Harry thought he was to be congratulated on his idea of hiding there. He was not, perhaps, very comfortable lying in the hot, hard earth. But on the other hand, nobody was glaring at him, grinding their teeth so loudly that he could not hear the news, or shooting nasty questions at him, as it happened every time he tried sitting down in the living room and watching television with his aunt and uncle. Almost as though this thought had fluttered through the open window, Vernon Dursley, Harry's uncle, suddenly spoke. "Glad to see the boy stop trying to butt in. Where is he, anyway?"
"I don't know," said Aunt Petunia unconcernedly. "Not in the house."
Uncle Vernon grunted.
"Watching the news," he said scathingly. "I'd like to know what he's really up to. As if a normal boy cares what's on the news. Dudley hasn't gotten a clue what's going on. Doubt he knows what the Prime Minister is. Anyway, it's not as if there'd be anything in his lot on our news, anyway."
"Vernon!"
"Shh," said Aunt Petunia.
"The window's open."
"Oh, yes, sorry, dear."
The Dursleys fell silent. Harry listened to a jingle about fruit and bran breakfast cereal while he was watching Mrs. Fig, a batty, cat-loving old lady from nearby. From nearby Wisteria Walk, amble slowly past. She was frowning and muttering to herself. Harry was very pleased that he was concealed behind the bush. Mrs. Fig had recently taken to asking him around for tea whenever she met him in the street. She had rounded the corner and vanished from view before Uncle Vernon's voice floated around out of the window again.
"Dudder's out for tea?"
"At the Polk Caesars," said Aunt Petunia fondly. "He's got so many little friends, he's so popular."
Harry repressed a snort with difficulty. The Dursleys were really astonishingly stupid about their son, Dudley. They had swallowed all of his dim-witted lies about having tea with a different member of his gang every night of the summer holidays. Harry knew perfectly well that Dudley had not been to tea anywhere. He and his gang spent every evening vandalizing the play park, smoking on street corners, and throwing stones at passing cars and children. Harry had seen them at it during his evening walks around Little Wingdon. He had spent most of the holidays wandering the streets, scavenging newspapers from bins along the way.
The opening notes of the music that heralded the 7 o'clock news reached Harry's ear, and his stomach turned over. Perhaps tonight, after a month of waiting, would be the night. Record number of stranded holidaymakers fill airports, and the Spanish baggage handler's strike reaches its second week.
Give him a lifelong siesta, I would,
snarled Uncle Vernon over the end of the newsreader's sentence, but no matter. Outside in the flower bed, Harry's stomach seemed to unclench. If anything had happened, it surely would have been the
wait,
first...
Wait, wait.
What?
Sorry, I was adjusting.
Oh, okay. Are you all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If anything had happened, it surely would have been the first item on the news. Death and destruction were more important than stranded holidaymakers. He let out a long, slow breath and stared up at the brilliant blue sky. Every day this summer had been the same. The tension, the expectations, the temporary relief. And then the mounting tension again. And always growing more insistent all the time, the question of why nothing had happened yet. He kept listening, just in case there was some small clue, not recognized for what it was by the Muggles, an unexplained disappearance, perhaps, or some strange accident. But the baggage handler's strike was followed by news on the drought in the southeast. I hope he's listening next door, bellowed Uncle Vernon, with his sprinklers on at 3 a.m. And then a helicopter that had almost crashed in the field in Surrey. Then a famous actress's divorce from her famous husband. As if we'd be interested in their sordid affairs, said Uncle Vernon, who had followed the case obsessively in every magazine.
No, he didn't. It was Aunt Petunia, and you just didn't do the voice right, and so you tried to cover it up.
No, yeah. I was trying to decide if I should keep reading that or not. Okay, we'll do...
I caught you.
The problem...
To have the book to know.
The problem is, it was on the next line on the very left, so I didn't quite catch who was saying it before I started the voice. I'll do that again with the right voice now.
Okay.
As if we're interested in their sordid affairs, sniffed Aunt Petunia, who had followed the case obsessively in every magazine she could lay her bony hands on.
So you had that last part, too. Harry closed his eyes against the now blazing evening sky, as the newsreader said. And finally, Bungie the Budgie has found a novel way of keeping cool this summer. Bungie, who lives at the Five Feathers in Barnsley, has learned to water ski. Mary Dorkins went to find out more. Man, her writing's really bad.
Just read.
Harry opened his eyes again. If they had reached water skiing Budgerigers, there was nothing else worth hearing. He rolled cautiously out to his front and raised himself on his knees and elbows, preparing to crawl out from under the window. He had moved about 2 inches when several things happened in quick succession. A loud echoing crack broke the sleeping silence like a gunshot. A cat streaked out from under a parked car and flew out of sight. A shriek, a bellowed oath, and the sound of breaking china came from the Dursleys' living room. And as though Harry had been waiting for the signal, he jumped to his feet, at the same time pulling from the waistband of his jeans a thin wooden wand, as if he were unsheathing a sword. But before he could draw himself up to full height, at the top of his head collided with the Dursleys' open window. Oh, that's gotta hurt. And the resultant crash made Aunt Petunia scream even louder. Harry felt as if his head had been split in two. Eyes streaming, he swayed, trying to focus on the street and spot the source of the noise. But he had barely staggered upright when 2 large purple hands reached through the open window and closed tightly around his throat.
Put it away, Uncle Vernon snarled into Harry's ear. Now, before anyone sees.
Get off me, Harry gasped. For a few seconds they struggled, Harry pulling at his uncle's sausage-like fingers with his left hand, and his right maintaining a firm grip on his raised wand. Then, as the pain on the top of Harry's head gave a particularly nasty throb, Uncle Vernon yelped, and released Harry as though he had received an electric shock. Some invisible force seemed to have surged through his nephew, making him impossible to hold.
Panting, Harry fell forward over the hydrangea bush, straightened up, and stared around. There was no sign of what had caused the loud cracking noise, but there were several faces peering through various windows nearby. Harry stuffed his wand hastily back in his jeans and tried to look innocent. "Lovely evening," shouted Uncle Vernon, waving at Mrs. Number 7, who was glaring from behind her net curtains. "Did you hear that car backfire just now? Gave Aunt Petunia and me quite a turn. He continued to grin in a horrible, manic way until all the curious neighbors had disappeared from their various windows. Then the grin became a grimace of rage as he beckoned Harry back toward him. Harry moved a few steps closer, taking care to stop just short of the point at which Uncle Vernon's outstretched hands could resume their strangling. "What the devil do you mean by it, boy?" asked Uncle Vernon in a croaky voice that trembled with fury. "What do I mean by it?" said Harry coldly. He kept looking left and right up the street, hoping to see the person who had made the cracking noise. "Making a racket like a starting pistol right outside." "I didn't make that noise," said Harry firmly. Aunt Petunia's thin, horsey face now appeared beside Uncle Vernon's wide purple one. She looked livid.
"What? Why were you lurking about under our window?" "Yes, yes, good point, Petunia. What were you doing under our window, boy?"
"Listening to the news," said Harry in a resigned voice. His aunt and uncle exchanged looks of outrage.
"Listening to the news? Again?"
"Well, it changes every day, you see," said Harry.
"Don't you be clever with me, boy. I want to know what you're really up to. You'll go give me any more of this listening to the news, posh. You know perfectly well that you're locked."
"Careful, Vernon."
"Careful, Vernon!"
breathed Aunt Petunia, and Uncle Vernon lowered his voice so that Harry could barely hear.
"That's your lot. Don't get on our news."
"That's all you know," said Harry. The Dursleys goggled at him for a few seconds, and then Aunt Petunia said,
"You're a nasty little liar! What are all those—"
She, too, lowered her voice so that Harry had to lip-read the next word.
"Owls doing if they're not bringing you news?"
"Aha," said Uncle Vernon in triumphant whisper. "Get out of that one, boy. As if we didn't know about that you get all your news from those pestilential birds." Harry hesitated for a moment. It cost him something to tell the truth this time, even though his aunt and uncle could possibly not know how bad Harry felt admitting it. "The owls aren't bringing me news," said Harry tonelessly.
"I don't believe it," said Aunt Petunia at once.
"No more do I," said Uncle Vernon forcefully.
"We know you're up to something funny."
"We're not stupid, you know."
"Well, that's news to me," said Harry, his temper rising. Before the Dursleys could call him back, he'd wheeled about, crossed the front lawn, and stepped over the low garden wall, was striding off up the street. He was in trouble now, and he knew it. He would have to face his aunt and uncle later and pay the price for his rudeness. But he did not care very much at the moment. He had much more pressing matters on his mind. Harry was sure that the cracking noise had been made by someone apparating or disapparating. It was exactly the sound that Dobby the house elf made when he had vanished into thin air. Was it possible that Dobby was here in Privet Drive? Could Dobby be following him right at this very moment? As this thought occurred to him, he wheeled around and stared back down Privet Drive. But it appeared to be completely deserted again, and Harry was sure that Dobby did not know how to become invisible. He walked on, hardly aware of the route he was taking, for he had pounded these streets so often lately that his feet carried him to his favorite haunts automatically. Every few steps he glanced back over his shoulder. Something magical had been near him as he lay among his Aunt Petunia's dying begonias. He was sure of it. Why hadn't they spoken to him? Why hadn't they made contact? Why were they hiding now? And then, as his feeling of frustration peaked, his certainty leaked away. Perhaps it hadn't been a magical sound after all. Perhaps he was so desperate for the tiniest sign of contact from the world to which he belonged that he was simply overreacting to perfectly ordinary noises. Could he be sure that it hadn't been the sound of something breaking inside a neighbor's house? Harry felt a dull, sinking sensation in his stomach. And before he knew it, the feeling of hopelessness that had plagued him all summer rolled over him once again. Tomorrow morning he would be awoken by the alarm at 5 o'clock, so that he could pay the owl that delivered the daily profit. But was there any point in continuing to take it? Harry merely glanced at the front page before throwing it away these days. When the idiots who ran the paper finally realized that Voldemort was back, it would be headline news. It was the only kind Harry cared about. If he was lucky, there would be owls carrying letters from his best friends, Ron and Hermione, though any expectation he had had that their letters would bring him news had long since been dashed. We can't say much about you-know-who, obviously. We've been told not to say anything important in case our letters go astray. We were quite busy, but I can't give you details here. There's a fair amount going on. We'll tell you everything when we see you. But when were they going to see him? Nobody seemed to bother with a precise date. Hermione scribbled, "I expect we'll be seeing you quite soon," inside his birthday card. But how soon was soon? As far as Harry could tell from the vague hints in their letters, Hermione and Ron were in the same place, presumably at Ron's parents' house. He could hardly bear to think of the pair of them having fun at the Burrow while he was stuck in Privet Drive. In fact, he was so angry at them for having thrown away that he had thrown away both their birthday presents of Honeydukes chocolates, all unopened, though he had regretted this after eating the wilting salad Aunt Petunia had provided for dinner that night. And what were Ron and Hermione busy with? Why wasn't he, Harry, busy? Hadn't he proven himself capable of handling much more than they? Had they all forgotten what he had done? Hadn't it been he who had entered the graveyard and watched Cedric been murdered and tied to that tombstone and had been nearly killed? Don't think about that, Harry told himself sternly for the 100th time. It was bad enough he kept revisiting the graveyard in his nightmares without dwelling on it in his waking moments, too. He turned a corner into Magnolia Crescent. Halfway along, he passed the narrow alleyway down the side of a garage where he had first clapped eyes on his godfather. Sirius, at least, seemed to understand how Harry was feeling. Admittedly, his letters were just as empty of proper nouns as Ron and Hermione's, but at least they contained words of caution and consolation instead of tantalizing hints. "I know this must be frustrating for you. Keep your nose clean and everything will be okay. Be careful and don't do anything rash." Well, thought Harry as he crossed Magnolia Crescent and turned into Magnolia Road, heading down toward the darkened play park, he had, by and large, done as Sirius had advised. He had at least resisted the temptation to tie his trunk to his broomstick and set off for the Burrow by himself. In fact, Harry thought his behavior had been very good, considering how frustrated and angry he felt at being stuck in Privet Drive for this long, reduced to hiding in flower beds in the hope of hearing something that might point to what Lord Voldemort was doing. Nevertheless, it was quite galling not to be told not to be rash by a man who had served 12 years in the wizard prison, Azkaban, escaped, attempted to commit the murder he had been convicted for in the first place, and then gone on the run with a stolen hippogriff. Harry vaulted over the locked park gate and set off across the parched grass. The park was as empty as the surrounding streets. When he reached the swings, he sank onto the only one that Dudley and his friends had not yet managed to break, coiled one arm around the chain, and stared moodily on the ground. He would not be able to hide in the Dursley's flower bed again. Tomorrow he would have to think of some fresh way of listening to the news. In the meantime, he had nothing to look forward to but another restless, disturbed night. Because even when he escaped nightmares about Cedric, he had unsettling dreams about long, dark corridors, all finishing in dead ends and locked doors, which he had supposed had something to do with the trapped feeling he had when he was awake. Often the old scar on his forehead pricked uncomfortably, but he did not fool himself that Ron or Hermione or Sirius would find that very interesting anymore. In the past, his scar hurting had warned that Voldemort was getting stronger again, but now that Voldemort was back, it would probably remind him that its regular irritation was only to be expected, nothing to be to worry about. Old news. The injustice of it all welled up inside him so that he wanted to yell with fury. If it hadn't been for him, nobody would have even known Lord Voldemort was back, and his reward was to be stuck in a little wing for 4 solid weeks, completely cut off from the magical world, reduced to squatting about dying begonias so that he could hear about water skiing budgerigears. How could Dumbledore have forgotten him so easily? Why had Ron and Hermione gotten together without inviting him along, too?
How much longer was he supposed to endure Sirius telling him to sit tight and be a good boy, or resist the temptation to write the stupid Daily Prophet and point out that Voldemort had returned? Those furious thoughts whirled around in Harry's head, and his insides writhed with anger as a sultry, velvety night fell around him. The air full of the snow of warm, dry grass, and the only sounds, that of the grumble of traffic on the road beyond the park railings. Should we stop there? Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good place to stop before the action gets going, you know? So I hope you liked it. And it's bedtime now. You're a very sweet kitten. We'll say goodnight to you. I love you so much. Mwah, mwah, mwah. She's so beautiful.